Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome to today's program Greg Keffer, who is Vice President of Corporate Marketing at GT Nexus. And today we're going to talk about a new age in supply chains, realizing the benefits of business networks and communities. You know, this is a topic, you know, the terms business networks, communities, social networking, you know, certainly something that I've written a lot about. It's something that's getting a lot of play. And a lot of discussions in the industry today, but I still find that folks still don't quite understand what those terminology means, and more importantly, you know, how are they having an impact today on supply chains, and how will they have impacts moving forward? And that's really going to be at the heart of the question, you know, that we're going to explore today with Greg. So very excited to have him on the program. Just want to remind you that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So as Greg and I are having our conversation, if you do have a question for Greg, you can do so. You can submit it via the submit a question button or via the chat feature, and I'll keep an eye on that. And certainly, if we've got time and it's a good and appropriate question, I'll you know, weave it into the conversation. And then just a last reminder that if you do want to ask a question and you're signed in as a visitor, you do have to sign in before you can ask a question. So with that, Greg, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Adrian. Looking forward to this.
Well, Greg, you know, before we dive into the topic, you know, since you're a first-time guest here on Talking Logistics, I always like to ask my guests, you know, how and why they got involved in supply chain logistics to begin with. So why don't you briefly tell us a little bit about your career path, you know, how and why you got involved in this industry, and kind of what your current role and responsibilities are there at GT Nexus.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it's funny. I actually got into it by accident, if you can believe that. Like most people out there, you know, I was out working in a marketing ad agency environment before this, and was sort of oblivious to this big, gigantic world of supply chain that happens, you know, every day. You know, when you walk into a Walmart store, you know, you really never think about what it takes to fill that thing up and keep it stocked with seasonal merchandise. You know, I came over here to GT Nexus, which at the time was called Tradient, right at the peak of the bubble in 2000. And at the time, the company was really focused on building a, you know, an ocean container freight marketplace. And I smelled the opportunity and found, like most people, it was pretty interesting stuff. You know, I live here in the Oakland, San Francisco Bay Area, and, you know, we have those gigantic cranes out there at the Port of Oakland that, you know, were the basis for George Lucas's, you know, gigantic walkers in the Empire Strikes Back, right? So, you know, you kind of begin to think, wow, working in this industry could be kind of interesting. So I made the leap, you know, went from a kind of a business to consumer ad agency world and marketing world, and was employee number 16 here at GT Nexus. And so, you know, I came in to run marketing. It was a very small company at the time, and sort of ridden the wave for the past 15 years. And, you know, working with people like yourself, it's really evolved a lot. You know, back then when I first joined, it was marketplaces, e-marketplaces. I'm sure you remember those days, and that had a place, but I think it's evolved tremendously since then, because, you know, we were just getting started in e-commerce on the consumer side, and as we know, the B2B side is generally lagging what goes on the consumer side by about a decade. So, you know, fast forward to 2015, about to be 2016. And boy, what a different place it's been. And so, I've just enjoyed it. I find that, you know, you come to work every day, and, you know, I'm blessed with getting to work with some very, very large multinational corporations on one end of my job. So I'm interacting with supply chain execs at, you know, Pfizer and Caterpillar and Nike, et cetera. I get to interact with people like you, you know, which who I kind of call the influencers, you know, the smart guys that are supposed to tell us what's going to happen next. And of course, last, I get to work with a lot of people here at the company to, you know, propagate the message out there in the market. So it's been a lot of fun. I mean, I can't believe it's been 15 years, and I'm still having a great time. So, you know, more and big, better stuff on the way, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, that's a common theme with a lot of the folks that I have on the program in terms of getting to this industry by accident, if you will, whether they started like you did, you know, more in a, you know, marketing role or kind of completely outside the industry, or even starting in manufacturing or some other aspect of business process, and then really coming to find this industry and loving this industry primarily because of how quickly it changes and how it has evolved. And certainly, like you mentioned, a lot has changed over the past 15 years. And that brings us to kind of the topic at hand, right? I mean, I think one of the big things that has happened over the past 15 years is this evolution from, marketplaces and exchanges that we were talking about back at the, height of the dot-com boom and fueled a lot of what was going on back then in this industry to kind of what we're talking about today, which is kind of evolved more towards business networks and communities. And I think when most people in our industry hear the term, business networks, I think they still tend to think of EDI networks, but that's certainly not the new era in supply chains that you're talking about. So, I mean, what's your definition of, a business network, and how does it relate to that other buzz term that we're hearing a lot out there, namely communities?
Yeah, so you're right. Confusion reigns. That's probably the makes my job very challenging in a marketing role to sit here and do stuff like this to try to explain it. But I think that the term network is can mean a lot of different things. And networks in and of themselves are not new. EDI is still actually in the game. It's very much in the mix here, which I'll talk about in a little while here. But really, when I think or when we think of the network and the community or the modern business network and what that is, I mean, obviously supply chains being more global by the day, the art of supply chain is interacting and collaborating with a network of partners, right? And for years, companies have struggled to do that. And it's one thing to get together at a trade show or get together at a software company user event and talk as a group and try to come up with a standard or agree to something. And there's lots and lots of examples of that over the years that are out there, which you probably have 15 of them you could tell me about. But what's different today is the technology layer that gets into the mix now. And look no further than networks and how it's affected our both personal and business lives with things like Facebook and LinkedIn, where as the cloud and the technology built on the cloud, where suddenly there is this single network, the internet, that everybody can get onto. Every device we have gets us on the internet, right? And if you think back to 2000, when I got my start in this industry, you would never have imagined that you could go onto this thing called LinkedIn and locate somebody that you saw speaking at a show and connect with them and start interacting with them. And I think when you get to the next level, when you talk about supply chains and where you're beginning to link that collaboration and communication to actual orchestration, doing stuff, it takes on a whole new dimension. And similarly to the way these social networks, operate in terms of, everybody on these things, easy access, everybody's there, we're beginning to see the same things in the technology that companies use to orchestrate their supply chains, where you're getting a social dimension, but also it's connected to the actual running the supply chains in our case, in the case of this world that we live in. And that's where it gets really interesting, because now you've got situations where a community of companies, a business network of companies that could be competitors, but they all share the same network, the same connections, the same EDI connections, the same software, the same line of code, right? Where they now get together and those discussions take on a very, very different meaning than they did when we were all at a user event, right? I mean, even if you were all on, say, SAP for ERP, as you know, Adrian, there are countless versions and customizations to that where it really moves from apples to apples and pears and oranges pretty quick. But with cloud platforms, where where you think of a hosted shared system, like any cloud system out there, where it really truly is the same software, where the tabs look the same and the tables look the same, where you can fire up a browser and show somebody, another company how you did something, they can actually go back and do the exact same thing. That becomes really, really interesting. So, on one level, there's that notion of a network or a community, and then there's other aspects where you share the same partners. For example, in the supply chain, there's a lot of cases where everybody shares the same partners, and you can get into some things there in terms of how you interact with those partners, how you get information or data with those partners and potentially get into benchmarking. So there's a lot of really interesting things that happen when the internet becomes sort of the standardizer of information and process.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, you know, that you touched upon. You know, certainly, I think the making the analogy with, you know, social networks like LinkedIn and Facebook and the like. I mean, I think that is kind of the direction that, you know, when we talk about business networks today, that I think the industry wants to move toward. And I think there's a lot of attributes to what we're seeing on the social networking side that I think are have very powerful implications on the supply chain side in terms of, you know, kind of using that common platform to communicate and collaborate, you know, more effectively between companies and trading partners, you know, so on and so forth. I think there are some challenges there, which I want to talk about in a little bit here. But let me get first to kind of, and I think you touched upon it a little bit, you know, obviously another buzz term today is cloud technology. And I would view cloud and everything going around with cloud being one of the key enablers of these business networks and communities. So what are they? I mean, is it cloud, and what other key enablers are there to that?
Well, cloud's obviously a big part of it because, again, that becomes suddenly, right, the software isn't, you know, sitting around at the nodes of a network, right? The center, the software, you know, the line of code, if you will, and the information moves from the nodes of a network to the center of a network. And when that happens, right, you know, you've probably heard this term, but the notion of a single version of truth, where everybody is pointing at the same business object in the center of the network, which is a big part of what cloud brings to the mix, especially when you talk about supply chains. And there are certain types of cloud technology where it's for the single company. You know, think of Salesforce.com, which is, you know, the darling of cloud. Well, CRM system really is for me and my company. We use Salesforce.com here, and it's great. It keeps all my marketing opportunities. It's got our sales forecast. It's got our contact list. But I don't really need to share that with anybody outside GT Nexus, okay? But when you start talking about orchestration and supply chain, where it is inherently about multiple companies coming together, you know, how do you get off of the telephone game? Remember the telephone game where when you were a kid, you'd sit in a circle and you'd sit, you know, you'd start to the left and you'd tell the kid, the shipment is going to arrive on Tuesday at 5 p.m., okay? And by the time it went around the room and got back to the other side, it was, my grandfather's going to give me a new pony for Christmas, okay? All right, so why? Well, it's because, you know, that story changes as it goes around. And, of course, as you know, in supply chain, things are changing constantly. But when you think of LinkedIn, we go back to that analogy, and you think of when you change your phone number and you hit save, everybody in your network now still knows how to reach you. It's not like they have to go back and update their own internal records. So the cloud is, you couldn't get to that without cloud, right? So, you know, cloud has a lot of really solid economic benefits for a company. You know, you don't have to go out and buy hardware and run a data center and invest in all that infrastructure. You know, you rent it, which is wonderful. And for a lot of industries, a lot of segments of technology, that alone is enough. For CRM, for HR, generally speaking, you know, that alone is good. But when you start talking about orchestration and, again, working with multiple different companies, which is inherently what supply chain is, it takes on a different dimension. And this is where the network aspect comes along, because not only are you talking about having cloud software, if you will, out there, but you've got to have a network in the cloud that's tethered to it. And that network has to be open for all to be on. It cannot be a hard, rigid EDI thing that takes years and years to implement, and once you get it done, everything's going to change on you. So, you know, the idea is that with a cloud-based network, in theory, you know, a vendor, say a carrier, could set up shop on this network one time, and when they're set up for customer A, the next 16 companies that join that network that work with that same carrier, they're already there. They don't have to start over. So you start seeing these economies in networks that is still somewhat bleeding edge, and most people still don't fully understand. I think the word is out on cloud, right? It being, you know, better, less risk. You know, you don't have to take on all the cost and risk up front. The whole security thing that was going around for the last, you know, 10 years ago, that seems to have died down. I think people are kind of over that. You've got millennials joining the workforce, right? Millennials that are moving into power positions in IT at large companies now, who, you know, are not really up for trying to make old green screen systems work and are very into, they grew up with the internet and they grew up with social networks. So, you know, their view of how things will work and what the possibilities are much different than the person that was hired in 1985. So, you know, I really think that there's still a lot of education to go on because there's a lot of big software vendors, my competitors, who are, you know, are out claiming they have cloud. And I'm not saying we're the only one that does it this way, but oftentimes when you hear cloud from a technology company, what they're talking about is, I will give you my software and host it for you. And that, again, that's great. But when it comes to supply chain, how are you going to build that network around it? How are you going to hook all that up? Because again, at the end of the day, there is a data dimension. There is an EDI or XML dimension that comes into play with supply chain that's somewhat unique because most other industries don't have that. But in supply chain, a lot of the information that companies need sit outside their own four walls. You know, we've done some research and 80% of the data in a supply chain that a company needs to run the supply chain doesn't sit in their systems. It resides in the systems of partners, right? So you've got to get that information because information is insight, right? Without information, software is useless. And so there is a network dimension that comes along with supply chain. And in that area, we're just at the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot of work and a long way to go to really get the industry to understand how that is different than, say, implementing a software system in the cloud and then going out and building a bunch of EDI connections, which is sort of the way you've been doing it for the past 30 years. And that really, really doesn't work.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think that you're right. And I think that's the whole aspect of, you know, cloud and the network component of it, because I think there is a lot of folks using that terminology cloud and hosted and software as a service. And there's still a lot of confusion because people are using those terms and to mean different things, right? So I think, you know, I think what we're talking about here is really a multi-tenant type of environment where I think, as you brought up earlier, you know, the opportunity is where the network becomes the single source of truth, if you will, where multiple parties in the extended supply chain, you know, connect to, and that becomes the medium for information exchange and collaboration, so on and so forth. And I think you just kind of alluded to this. I mean, it strikes me that we're still kind of in the, relatively speaking, in the early adopter stage when it comes to companies kind of embracing, you know, business networks and communities to transform this supply chain, you know, processes. You know, do you agree, number one? And number two, if so, you know, what are some of the big hurdles that are still out there to drive greater adoption?
Yeah, I think I lost you, Adrian. Okay, you froze there for a second, but I think I caught that. Yes, it's still early. I would absolutely agree with that. This is heavy stuff. You know, we're talking about, you know, very, very large, complex supply chains at very large companies in a lot of cases. It's a big leap to trust a cloud system to put all your purchase orders in, right? And if that system goes down or isn't reliable, you can't ship product. That's right. That's a big deal. So, you know, I think that the way that the market's going to evolve is through proof points. And, you know, when I think of the way a market tips, when you look at it, you know, there's kind of three phases to a tip. And the first phase is, you know, you get a great idea, you prove it out, you get a couple of risk takers, if you will, or companies that understand the potential and help drive the innovation. They get guinea pig pricing, typically, and they help define the solution. And they then begin to talk about that publicly. The second phase is, you know, you'll get like what I'll call they're not risk takers, but they're early adopters. They're companies that realize the old way isn't going to work. And that's, you know, kind of the beginning of mass adoption. Because at the end of the day, what's really going to drive, make the market flip is when you have tens or hundreds of large companies out talking, like on forums like this, about their successes. You know, you do a lot of case studies and talk to a lot of end users. We go to these trade shows and see these people speaking. And what it's going to take is a lot of them getting up on stage and talking about the benefits. And you say, well, why on earth would a company do that? I mean, isn't it intellectual property or you know, leading the edge advantage? And the answer is, yeah, that's probably true, but it's in their best interest to get the community, the world, onto a platform like theirs, because with more adoption, you know, in essence, you know, solidifies the solution itself. You know, if you think back to the early days of electricity, if somebody built this, you know, generator and a few power lines, but no one wanted to join the utility and pay the $40 monthly fee for electricity, you know, we still might all have our own generator, right? So, you know, you need that mass adoption to really invest in the infrastructure to make it go. And I think that we're somewhere in that second and third realm. You know, we've, you know, in our case at GT Nexus, we've got a lot of very large customers. You know, you've seen a lot of those stories. And they're out taking very strong public stances on what they're seeing. They're active in the community. They're up on stage talking about this stuff, getting written up a lot. And I think it's those kinds of stories that are going to drive the you know, the holdouts, which is still the majority, to move to a place where do we get to a spot someday where there is an AT&T for supply chain information? I mean, will that happen? And if so, you know, how will that happen? And I think there's a couple of good systems, a couple of good platforms that are floating around out there that have the makings for it. There may be one or two or three, but there isn't going to be 50. How do we get from, you know, 50 to 3? And I think that's the place we're at right now. And I think the 3 will come out on top by having, you know, a good mix of large companies that are behind it, that have a big network, right? The value of Facebook isn't its software. You know, the value of Facebook is it's got over a billion people on it. Okay, so you think about networks in the modern age, and that really is the value. It's less about the features and functions of the software, and it really is about the network. So I think that the same thing is going to happen in supply chain and business, just because it is such a network-intensive environment that you have to operate in. So, you know, I think it's well past phase one, and I think we're on the road to, you know, phase two into phase three.
Yeah, you bring up a great point there, you know, in terms of, you know, the value of something like Facebook being the number of, you know, people that are on it, you know, the size of the network. You know, one of the big challenges I see, one of the big hurdles that I see, and I think it's been one of the challenges with EDI as being kind of historically been the primary mode or medium to create these, you know, create networks, is kind of simplifying and expediting the onboarding time, right? To bring trading partners on, I think is a big, you know, so to get on Facebook, it takes literally, you know, 30 seconds, right? Same thing with LinkedIn. It's not so quick on the supply chain side per se, although I see progress moving there. I mean, what do you see there on that front in terms of, you know, the techniques or innovation going on to help simplify and expedite the onboarding process for companies to get on these networks?
Right. Okay, well, let me just couch it by saying I'm definitely not an EDI technical expert here, but having been here for as long as I have and observed it, you know, I do think that, you know, the notion of a standard connection to a platform is key. And, you know, there's been a lot of progress in that area, although there are also a lot of companies that resist that because they've got a very customized map for an order. Say, you know, an order, a PO is a, I think it's called an 850 EDI message, right? And not all 850 EDI messages are created equal. They're different based on the way companies have them configured in their order management systems, which is typically in some sort of software. So, you know, there's sort of a path of least resistance approach where, well, let's just build a custom map for my EDI because it's way harder for me to go back into my system and reconfigure that than it is just to build a one-off custom map. And again, that comes down to a battle of wills. And you can do it either way in theory, but I think that what companies have to understand is if they embark on the short-term, more painful process of building a standard integration to a platform such as, you know, GT Nexus or some other system, it's going to be a lot easier down the road. You know, that gives them a lot more flexibility as things change. Because as you know, agility is a darling word in supply chain, and things are changing all the time. But if, you know, as a company, if you insist on being highly customized in the way you build connections, that's going to cost you down the road in agility and flexibility. Now, we've seen a lot of progress in areas, mostly in areas where there's a lot of overlap. So if you think about the players in supply chain, you know, the one area that is huge is ocean carriers, which is, you know, where GT Nexus first got a start. And if you think about the world of ocean carriers, you know, there's 30 major lines that everybody uses that handle 90 plus percent of the, you know, the transcontinental freight in the world. Okay. And so that was a no-brainer, you know. So you talk about anywhere from a shipper or a carrier like Maersk all the way down to Wanhai or something. And these top 20 lines are used by all companies, all verticals. And that industry was very smart. Those guys back in the 2000s opted to build standard integrations to GT Nexus in our case. And boy, I'll tell you, that has paid off in spades, because when a new customer comes on and wants to interact with one of those lines, it's weeks. It's weeks to get it live, sometimes days, depending on, I mean, it's a couple of coding moves and it's done. And boy, talk about scale and efficiency and what a benefit that is, not just for the buyers, but the partners as well. Because now your cost is going down, your ability to change is up, and generally speaking, it's easier to support from the carrier side, right? Because the carriers have to support hundreds or thousands of customer integrations across their network. And if they can go to one place and interact with their top 100 customers very easily, that's a very, very advantageous IT position for them to be in. So, we've seen it there. We've seen it in air freight forwarding as well. And we're beginning to see it with big 3PLs, for ASNs and things like that, where, again, you look at a DHL or a UPS, and they've got hundreds, potentially thousands of companies that are using them for ASNs, which is a very common data file that everybody needs when they roll out visibility. And to the degree they can build those in a standard way, that's going to help them in spades, not only from a just IT's cost perspective, but a customer service perspective. Because don't forget that today, shippers look at their partners as, information stakeholders in their value chain. And if you don't have good practices around what I've kind of coined information stewardship, that's going to cost you. You may be doing great in the stuff that, the classic logistics things, consolidation and running warehouses and driving trucks around. But if you can't deliver good, timely, accurate information around what you're doing to that customer, you've got a problem. Your business is potentially at risk to somebody that does have good information. And I think that's a paradigm shift too that's happening, where you see these big enterprises place a high premium on a company, a partner's value to support their information initiatives across their supply chain. And it's beginning to shake out winners from losers. And I think that's another dimension that we're beginning to see, which is pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah, no, related to that last point, I mean, I certainly see that in the 3PL industry, in particular, where, I think one of the ways that I heard someone kind of summarize it briefly, recently was that, 3PLs are no longer in just the movement of physical goods between point A to point B. They're also in the information forwarding business as well, in the business of really providing timely, accurate, and complete knowledge, information, and insights to their, to their customers. So I think that's certainly playing out in the 3PL industry. So what impact are you seeing, from the customers that you work with? Are business networks having on existing IT systems and infrastructure, such as ERP, solutions, supply chain applications that companies might have? I mean, is this something that, I guess to put it bluntly, is this something that corporate IT is embracing, or is this something that they're kind of still trying to figure out themselves and maybe even resisting?
I think the corporate IT question, it varies by company, as you might imagine. But from the standpoint of, look, what we're talking about here does not say rip out your ERP and start over. Obviously, some could be in such bad shape they have to do that. But obviously, massive investments have been made in systems at companies that were installed classic traditional software and continue to be made. I'll bump into people every now and then, and they tell me what they're spending on an ERP rollout, and it makes my head spin. But really, those systems, again, were never really designed or architected to operate outside the four walls of the company. And so the way you've got to look at this is you've got to look at these platforms, these cloud platforms, these network-based systems as extenders of those investments. And they interact with ERP all the time. ERP order management, financial systems, TMSs, installed TMSs, are all in the ecosystem of large companies. And oftentimes, they have many different versions. We've had actually customers that part of the value proposition that they've come to GT Nexus for is they want to actually link up all of their ERPs because, they've got 60 of them around the world, right? And they can't even talk to themselves. But by and large, most companies are integrating these ERPs and existing systems to a platform that has a network so they can extend that investment outside the four walls. And that's a very common thing. I mean, clearly, I believe there's a big market for cloud ERP that's out there. You know, you see some companies that are in that space and shaking things up and, you know, nipping away at the old guard there. But from a standpoint of supply chain, you know, we have a, you know, classic example. You know, a customer's got a big ERP, the orders are in there, right? Their forecasts are in there. They've got a planning system. Those orders then, you know, are hooked into a GT Nexus. They're distributed to suppliers. Things start getting made and shipped. That information is being collected. A lot of that data is being fed back into the ERP. We start getting invoices. That gets fed back to a ERP or AP system of some sort. You start getting global ETAs that have to go be driven into domestic TMS plans, right? So now you're linking back to an installed TMS system at a client. So, you know, the system environment of all the different worlds are linked in many cases in the cloud, a lot like how they link partners. But I also think IT oftentimes gets hung up in some massive, you know, city that they're trying to build of software. And the supply chain orchestration is sort of on the back burner. You know, in retail, of course, there's a lot of stress on credit card security and point of sale stuff, right? So you'll see instances where the IT leadership is focused on that, rightfully slow. So you can't obviously afford to let your customers' credit card data out. That's a big problem. And one of the great things, of course, with cloud is that a line of business team can actually get onto something in the cloud because there really is not a lot of IT required to make it happen. And oftentimes, you know, we see the business driving the initiative, not IT. And IT will get involved at some point, but they're generally hung up doing something else. So, you know, it definitely varies by company, but I also think IT is not blind to where the world is headed. And I think that you look at supply chain and how it's rising up in terms of importance. You know, you continue to have these disasters where disruptions are massive, you know, impacting performance on a, you know, like Wall Street level performance. You've got new trade agreements coming into place, which is just going to make the world flatter. And, you know, we've got a lot of customers, you know, big customers that are racing not to source globally, but to sell globally, you know, where they're opening stores by the thousands in China and Southeast Asia. And, you know, these are just dimensions of supply chain that no one was thinking about 8 years ago. So how fast can you get that set up and how fast can you support it? And it just ain't going to happen if you think your IT department's going to get involved and implement something and spend, you know, 6 years rolling some hardwired system out. Because by the time you do that, the world has gone on to something else. And it's like, you know, it's never going to catch up. So it's kind of, you either go there or you're going to perish, I think is probably the headline. And I think some CIOs get that and others don't.
Yeah, no, you raised some good points. I mean, my position has always been that I believe, in particular, manufacturers, retailers, you know, need to get out of the connectivity business. I mean, it's not you know, it's not a core competency. And to your point, I think their IT departments have plenty on their plate and plenty of things that they need to be focused on that you know will be a more valuable allocation of resources, time, and money for them to work on versus, you know, the creating a network and you know, one-to-one networks, you know, everyone kind of recreating the wheel on their own type of thing. So I think that's been a drum that I've been beating for, you know, for quite some time. So let's, you know, as we kind of have about, you know, a few minutes here. So I just want to kind of focus in on, you know, some use cases, some customer examples to kind of, you know, illustrate the how companies are, you know, generating value and business benefits from using, you know, networks and communities. Can you share a few kind of use cases, customer examples?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I've got a good one. You know, it goes right to the whole community story, which is what we talked about earlier. So one of the things at GT Nexus that happened about 8-9 years ago, we were at one of our user conferences back in the early days. It was much smaller than the one you went to a few months ago. And the light went off. You know, they were struggling a lot around data quality, which is a very, very common day in, day out battle that the operators of supply chains have to deal with in today's world. And, you know, I forget who it was, but one of our customers stood up and said, you know, we all share the same carriers, the same providers in the same network. What if we got together and kind of collaborated around how to work with these guys as a group, as opposed to all going after them individually? Now, there's a big distinction here because it doesn't mean we collude and act as one, because that's obviously illegal. But you know, we want to get together and look at how we're performing as a whole, and then work with them as a unit. Because again, per what I was talking about earlier, a lot of these big ocean carriers had built a standard integration years ago, and so it's one connection that they got to worry about. And at the time, you know, we kind of established what we call a data quality benchmark, which was a percentage. And in essence, it was basically on the completeness of the data. So, you know, if we expected 1,000 EDI files from carrier X and we got 822, they had an 82% data quality. And the actual number at the time in 07, 08 was somewhere around 60%. Okay, so 4 out of 10 messages that we expected to receive about freight were not coming in. So in essence, you've got a system that is truly you can't trust. And it's again, it's not the system's fault. It's the fact that the data quality is so poor, it's very hard to make really hard, important decisions when you want to expedite something or not expedite something, and add up when only 6 out of 10 times is the data correct. So this group got together. It's called the Shipper Council. And over the last 10 years, they meet quarterly on a call. They get together at events at various headquarters, and they talk about, you know, how the carriers are performing. You know, there's a scorecard. There are names on there, and they work with these guys as a group. So in other words, they will say, look, Mr. Carrier X, let's work on this EDI 315 message, which is a shipment event message. And if you do that, if you get it good, you're basically making 70 companies that have collective revenues of $1.7 trillion and move somewhere around 6 million TEUs a year happy. And so they got behind that. The carriers understood the value, and you know, you leapfrog, you know, 10 years forward, and these guys are now averaging about 98, 99% data quality. And it's gotten to a place where the group issues press releases every year recognizing an ocean carrier and an air freight forwarder for data quality performance, where the Shipper Council, not GTNexus, issues a press release. Last year, I believe it was Maersk Line won it for ocean, and Expeditors won it for air. And those providers are thrilled to be recognized by these customers and are totally doubling down to make it even better. And that's just a very great example of how a group, a community that's connected through a platform, a technology platform, is able to make real difference. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the work this group has done is benefiting companies that aren't even part of GTNexus, because it's driving a core competence into the provider. They know how to make data quality an IT priority, a customer service priority, which is huge if you look back to where it was before. And that's just for ocean. And they're now moving into the group is, you know, they feel like events are done. They're now getting into the timeliness, you know, so how do we condense it down from, you know, 16 hours to 20 minutes? And the completeness of the message itself is another dimension. And then they're moving out to other modes of transit, right? So they're getting into truck, they're getting into ASNs. And, you know, you look down the road 5, 6 years, and they're solving a problem that couldn't be solved for 30 years. And they're doing it in fairly short order. And it's only because they all are brought together through a common technology platform.
Well, that's a great example. I mean, you know, data quality management, I've always referred to it as the Achilles heel of supply chain management, because it's such a big challenge that, you know, companies across the supply chain have struggled with in terms of, you know, having timely, accurate, complete, you know, data and information, which really drives everything, business intelligence, you know, smarter decision making, so on and so forth. And I think the example you gave there, I think points to what I view as one of the great opportunities that I think we're still in the early stages of for networks and communities, which is, you know, around benchmarking, right? And helping to identify areas of continuous improvement. And I think that, you know, that example is a great example of kind of the potential for this. So that brings me, you know, in the interest of time here, I'm just going to wrap it up, and that brings me to kind of my last question. So that's one area that I see as kind of that's going to be a evolve further and brings, you know, significant value to companies and the ecosystem and the community involved with these platforms. I mean, how do you see, you know, these networks and communities evolving, you know, in the years ahead, and what actions should companies take today to prepare for that future?
Well, yeah, I think that they're evolving already very quickly. You mentioned benchmarking, and what I described there was what we would call, I guess we call data quality benchmarking. That same group is doing performance benchmarking as well, right? So they're looking at cycle times, port throughput at a community level, so they can compare individually against how they're performing against the group. And this is data that's happening in real time, right? As it's happening, think about the power of that. Think about as you look at a single unified platform where there's data normalization taking place, right? And you begin to look across that platform and essentially, genericize it so there's, no outliers that point to a particular company. And think about the power of that, where there's a disruption or there's a, you feel like you're underperforming or maybe you're overperforming, being able to get that instantly. It's not bringing in a consultant and spending 6 months on it. It's as it's happening. So I think that's a very, very interesting zone that these guys are getting into. And I think that we're at the tip of the iceberg here because, the other thing I had a very interesting, one of the things this group does is they get together every quarter at headquarters. And if you're a practitioner in supply chain and your boss or your boss's boss says, how are we performing against other companies? It's very powerful to go in and say, well, look, I get together regularly, not with other pharmaceutical companies like us, but a retailer or a CPG company or a chemicals company, because they all ship stuff and they find they have more in common than you think, right? So this multi-vertical notion is proven to be very powerful in the way the teams inside the corporations are evaluating themselves on a performance level. So I think that's another dimension that it's going to get into. But I think as these platforms become more entrenched and more the standard than the exception, I think there'll be some things that come up that we're not even thinking about yet. No one could have envisioned that you'd have LinkedIn and Facebook back in 2000, but here we are. And as you said, information is power. We hear data is the new oil. And information stewardship and partners and getting kind of that single source of truth where it's not about, as a group, as an industry, let's all agree to standardize this way. That won't work, okay? But you put technology in the center of a network and you let that be the translator, where suddenly there's a common language, an information language. Boy, information is power, And you walk around to different companies and say, look, what if I could tell you that you could have all of your global supply chain information in one place, in one format, in one common language? What would you do with it? And I bet you'll get 1,000 different answers. And I think that's the point that we're about to move into. And once that happens, I do think the market will flip. And it won't be, are you going to do this? It's like, why haven't you done this? Because it's the technology is now there. It's not a matter of you've got to, take this giant risk to leap in. Look, technology platform, like a GT Nexus, it's been around for 15 years. Think about the amount of money that's been invested in it. I mean, it's north of $500 million. Is any one company really going to go out and spend $500 million building their own technology system when they can just go in and jump on one that's already there and proven and in place? I don't think so, right? So I think that's the reality. And I think that it's just a matter of time before the market doesn't backflip and you do get these big, gigantic, ubiquitous AT&T Sprint-like systems for supply chain that really begin to change the game in a big way.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about one thing for sure, and that is that certainly if we fast forward, 10 years from now, we'll probably be very surprised by what will be in play then, because I think sometimes, we're limited by what we know, and sometimes, so hard to predict the future. And like you said, none of us saw what was going to happen in 2000, with regards to social networks. I think you're right. It's the same. We know what's existing today, and we know kind of the general direction where these networks are heading. But I'm with you. I think that in 10 years' time, I think that will be things will be going on with these networks and communities that we didn't imagine today, and that they're going to be providing some great value, to companies and all participants. Well, Greg, like I always say, we always manage to scratch the surface on these topics, and but certainly we touched upon a lot of different aspects of business networks and communities, and hopefully, at a minimum, we got folks that perhaps are new to this conversation to, start thinking about this, learn about this more, and try to think about how, this might have a role within their supply chain and logistics strategies moving forward. So thank you again for making the time for being with us today.
My pleasure. I had a really good time. Good chatting with you.
Great, and thank you all of you who joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand and you do have a question for Greg, you can find this episode on talkinglogistics.com, and you can post a question or a comment there, and I'm sure that Greg will be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.